It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we are returning to our schedule of weekly horticulture shows throughout the growing season, which is, of course, a clear sign of spring. And so we're going to start off today by talking about another sign of spring, one of the culinary delights of spring, the morel mushroom. And ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Geron will join us in a few minutes. But with me now is Mark Gleason, a professor in the Department of Plant Pathology and Microbiology at Iowa State University. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Charity. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
You bet.
And I know that coming up in just a few weeks, you're going to be offering classes for people who want to get certified so they can sell morel mushrooms. But before we talk about those classes, let's get back to the basics, because I think a lot of people enjoy eating morel mushrooms when they come their way, but feel a little intimidated by the process of going out and hunting for them. When can we start to expect them?
That's a good question, and it partly depends on the kind of spring we have. If we're having a warmer spring, we could expect them earlier. And as morel hunters know, and there's a lot of veteran morel hunters in the state, also the moisture conditions make a difference. Last year, 2015, we had a very good, by most reports, very good morel season because it was quite a damp spring, and it didn't come on too fast. So what we're hoping for is sort of a slow spring that has abundant water that enable those mushrooms to come up well and kind of last for a while.
What are the signs that lead you to start looking?
That's a good question. The morel hunters that I talk to are itching at the bit to get out there, and so they're out frequently even beforehand. I think if you look at Iowa, you'd expect them to show up first in the southern tiers of counties. It's a little bit warmer. There are networks on the internet and by other means of people who are tracking what's going on, for instance, in Missouri, and when people are finding morels in Missouri. And so that alerts the people in southern Iowa, and people in the rest of the state are watching what happens in the southern part so that they kind of get a tip off. It varies a lot year to year. It's interesting, particularly by temperature, but also moisture, as to when that start is. Sometimes it's, you'll hear talk of people in very early April in southern Iowa, and other years it's several weeks later than that to begin. And largely determined by how cool or how warm a spring it is.
Now, I know that for people who are interested in mushroom hunting, there are groups that hold workshops. But for people who are very experienced mushroom hunters, they tend to hold their secrets very, very close to the vest because they don't want to invite other people into their hunting grounds. I mean, from your perspective, what's the best way to start as a mushroom hunter?
That's a really good question. And I think that the best way to start is to befriend somebody who is a veteran morel hunter. Some people who are neophyte morel hunters will go out in the woods and be frustrated, and then somebody else will look in the same woods and find a lot of morels. It's a matter of training your eye, because these things kind of look like the background. They're growing on the forest floor, and they're kind of brown, and the background is kind of brown, and your eye kind of needs to be trained. So really the most effective way is to find somebody who's experienced, and luckily there's a lot of people in the state that fit that description. Some people have been hunting morels as soon as they could walk, and they've been doing it for decades since, so there's a lot of potential trainers out there.
And what do you need to learn before you go out there to look about how to identify a morel and make sure you're picking the right thing?
Well, I think it's important. Morels have a fairly distinctive look to them. The cap, or which is the biggest piece that you eat, the cap of the mushroom almost looks like the surface of a kitchen sponge. It has these holes in it and sort of ridges around the hole. So it has kind of an open, almost honeycomb structure. It looks a little bit like a sponge. But of course, if you're out there looking for something that looks like a sponge, that won't be very helpful. But if you're, you know, the internet or reference guides are helpful to see this very distinctive look. There's a number of species, at least five species of morels in Iowa, but they all have this fairly distinctive appearance to them. There are some lookalikes that people should avoid, and that's part of the reason that we have our morel certification workshops, to help people distinguish The morels are always good to eat, but some of the there are some lookalikes that are riskier to eat.
Okay. So it's probably a good idea to spend some time with a photo identification guide and just make sure you know what things look like, right?
It's a good start. But then, of course, anybody who looks at those kind of guides knows that nature isn't quite like the book. And not that it's, you know, tremendously different. You can get a general idea, but a value of having somebody with you who's experienced is that you get sort of their real world experience, and that's invaluable.
Right. Now, you mentioned that there are lots of groups online now that chatter about morel mushrooms and other wild edibles as well. So you can get online and you can tune in to, hey, they're out there. It's time to go look. I go out into the woods to look, and you talked about how you can go out hunting for mushrooms and see nothing, and someone else can come along and come back out with a huge bag full of morels. Mm-hmm. So when you go out there, how do you start? What's the best way to start looking?
Well, some people will say that the area on the ground around certain trees is helpful. The rule of thumb common wisdom is that dead and decaying elms are a good place to look under. And because of Dutch elm disease, we have a lot of dead and dead and decaying elms in the state. So finding those standing dead elms and looking in the vicinity of the root zone around those trees can be one way. But they're not just restricted to growing on the decaying roots of elms. You'll find them around other situations as well, but it's typically going to be a situation with some organic matter, because these are fungi that make typical fungi. They make their living from breaking down dead organic matter, and they're going to be in the forest floor or someplace else that has a source of you know, decaying organic matter that they can eat.
And are forested areas the best places to look?
In general, yes. I once had a morel growing through the steps growing up to my house. There was a morel coming out of the concrete, so I thought that was a little different. But most of the time, it's a woodland situation that you're looking for. You know, meadows and fields are less likely, not impossible. But people tend to hunt in the woods, and they have their favorite spots, and they tend to go back to those spots. And as you said, not everybody is super excited to share where they're getting them.
When you're looking and you see the signs as far as the decaying material, maybe the dead elm tree, that kind of thing, do you need to get down and start moving dead leaves and debris around to be able to see them?
I think that'd be kind of needle in a haystack approach. The morels will typically poke through that layer of decaying leaves in the early spring. But again, your eye, as many veteran morel hunters have told me, your eye needs to be trained a little bit. Of course, once you begin to spot them, it suddenly you're aware of others. So it's not something that requires years of training, but there is a little sort of initial necessity to train your eye. And some of the species are larger than others. There's a late season morel that can be the size of a couple of fists. It's quite large. It's quite prominent. But then others are more the size of your finger. They're smaller and less conspicuous. They do tend to grow oftentimes in groups rather than singly, although not always. So when you find a productive area, that might be enough for dinner.
And I know some people sort of feel like they spring up overnight. Do they? Can you go back to the same spot that you've already picked maybe a few days later and find more?
Yes, you can. Because these areas with the morel mushrooms, when the mushrooms pop up, actually you're looking at a broader area that's colonized by those morel fungi. In between the layers of decaying leaves are a little net-like body of the fungus that's growing out. You can't necessarily see it from the surface, but it's growing out in that decaying layer, and mushrooms will pop up from that net of fungus in various areas. So some of these areas could be a few square yards, and some could be larger. There's a lot of sort of it depends associated with this. And some areas that are productive for morels may be productive for a few years, and then in subsequent years not, because maybe the decay has passed on beyond morels really like that environment anymore. So it's I think this is part of the charm of hunting morels is they have an unpredictable aspect to them. And so there's that adventure aspect. It's not a matter of going to your favorite place and harvesting hundreds of mushrooms every year. If it were that simple, I think a lot of the challenge would go out of it. And believe me, there's plenty of challenge.
Right. Well, now some people are incredibly good at this. And of course, they harvest so many mushrooms that they want to sell them. And you're offering required morel mushroom certification workshops coming up. You need to register before March 21st for these workshops. But what is the process? Who are these for?
Well, in order to sell, according to the Iowa code, this was a change passed by the Iowa legislature in 2010. According to that Iowa law, in order to sell morels legally in Iowa, you have to be certified. And the mechanism for getting certified is this Iowa State University-sponsored workshop that I teach. And those are offered on three dates this year on the Iowa State campus, March 26th, April 9th, and April 16th. Those are three Saturdays, March 26th, April 9th, and April 16th. And the workshops are 1 to 4 p.m., and they're in the Seed Science Building on the Iowa State campus, which has abundant parking right across the street from it on the northeast corner of the campus. And if anybody needs directions to drive there from someplace, they can always call me, 515-294-0579, or email me at mgleason, that's M-G-L-E-A-S-O-N, at IA State, that's the word state spelled out, .edu. And I'd be happy to sort of walk you through that.
All right. And as I mentioned, you need to register by Monday, March 21st. We've put up a link to information about the workshops on
Excellent.
Our Facebook page,
Thank
Iowa
you.
Public Radio, and also on our Twitter feed as well. Mark, hang on because we'll be back in just a few minutes to take calls and questions. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will join us, along with Mark Gleason, professor in the Department of Plant Pathology and Microbiology at Iowa State University. You can ask questions about morel mushrooms or any of the plants in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or email talkofiowa at iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Again, we are returning to our weekly horticulture shows throughout the growing season. That means that spring is here no matter what the weather forecast says. And with me today, Mark Gleason, a professor in the Department of Plant Pathology and Microbiology at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And if you have questions, give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa at iowapublicradio.org. And we'll start with a question today from Michael in Des Moines. He says, what can I plant on my north-facing balcony that will make all of my neighbors jealous?
Okay, well, that's kind of a challenge. I would probably go maybe with some impatiens, or possibly some wax begonias. Those are annuals, and they both do well in partial shade, and I'm guessing they'll probably get some sun, so I would look at impatiens and wax begonias.
All right, and we have a number of other email questions as well. This one's from Larry in Elkader. Is it too late in Clayton County to prune side shoots from oak sapling resprouts?
I would say we're getting to that point where you want to be very, very quick if you're going to do it. I would say if you can do it this weekend, do it. The best time to prune oak trees basically is December, January, and February. The worst time is basically April, May, and June. And so March is a transition month. It goes from basically no risk to high risk. So you have to do it very, very soon. I would say by this weekend. I would not be doing it next weekend.
All right. Next, this one's from Ryan in Van Meter. When should I put sod down this spring for the best results?
I'd probably be doing that around probably late April, early May. Let the ground kind of warm up and firm up. And make sure you prepare this site nicely this spring. You don't want to rush things. And so if you can get that done by, let's say, late April, early May, you should be in good shape.
All right. Here's a question from Josh in Iowa City. Last fall, in early September, I transplanted some Nanking cherries. Last weekend, I did some late winter pruning and trimmed my established apple trees, cherry trees, and grapevines. However, I avoided the recently transplanted cherry bushes. Should I prune recent transplants?
I would try not to. I would prune out anything that was broken during the process, but I would leave everything pretty much intact. And that's because for that plant to recover, it needs to manufacture food. And the leaves manufacture the food. So if you do a lot of pruning, you're reducing the ability of that shrub to produce food. So I would just go ahead and prune out anything that might be broken during the transplanting process, any dead branches, but leave the live ones intact.
All right. And he has a follow-up, too. He says, I love the bush-type sweet cherries, and I hope they make it. But if they don't survive, do you know where I can find replacements? These shrubs aren't something I've seen at any of my local garden centers.
Yeah, Nanking cherries are commonly sold in catalogs, more so than at a local garden center. And so if they can't find them locally, I would check the internet and catalogs.
Do they do well here?
Yes, they do. They're perfectly hardy.
All right. And he also wants to know when the best time to transplant is, spring or fall.
I like doing it early in the spring before they leaf out. You want to do it when they're basically dormant, when they're leafless. You could do it in the fall, but spring is better, I think, because if you do it in the fall, you can never plan on what's going to happen in wintertime. It could be a very, very hard winter, and there might be some dieback. If you do it early in the spring, you can basically give them good care that spring and summer. They should be fine.
All right. Let's get to the phones, 866-780-9100. And we've got a question for you, Mark, on mushroom hunting from Lonnie in Fort Dodge. Hi, Lonnie.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I'm an avid mushroom hunting, and me and my dad have always kind of argued this point. I always thought that mushrooms maybe grow. Like, say you find a batch and you let them go for a couple of days. Will they grow an inch or two? Now, my father always said that once they, he always referred to it as once they mushroom up, that it is what that is what it is. Do they grow or do they not grow?
Well, if you put a video camera on them, you would see them poke out of the ground a little bit smaller, and they would go to the height that they're genetically programmed. As you know, there's more than one species, and some of the species only get to a certain small height, and others are taller. So their genetic program of those Morel species only allows them to get to a certain height. But yes, there is some increase in size, but then they top out. It's kind of like people, you know, you have a program to grow to a certain size, and also you're influenced by your environment, and Morels are too. If it's a drier environment, they may not get as big that year. But yeah, they do grow fast, but yes, they do grow and then they stop.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what I want to know. Well, I hope we have a good year this year.
Me
right.
too.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Lonnie. And so if you see one, you should probably pick it instead of waiting a couple days is my takeaway from that, Mark.
Well, somebody else may pick it before
right.
you.
That's the other thing. All right. Justin is up next in Des Moines. Hi, Justin.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
He said something earlier about having to be registered to sell the mushrooms.
Now, yes, that's the morels. Yes,
would that be to the store? That can you sell them privately or to mean to the stores? Or,
well, I'll just tell you the way the Iowa code reads or the Iowa law reads is that if you're selling them, whether at a farmer's market or to a restaurant or to a grocery store or privately or whatever. You're supposed to be registered, and that is done by means of taking this certification workshop that we were talking about earlier.
Okay, and it's a fairly minimal fee for being involved in the program, a $50 fee, but this meets the letter of the law, right?
Yes, and that registration lasts for 3 years, and we re-register people whose registration has lapsed for $25, but the initial registration is $50.
All right. And again, Justin, we've put up a link to that on our Twitter feed and on our Facebook page at Iowa Public Radio. You can also find out more on Extension's website as well. And let's get back to the phones. Barry's on the line in Marion. Hi, Barry.
Yeah, I had called last fall. I had had a maple tree grow from seed. It was late in the fall. And I said,
can I transplant it then, or should I wait till spring? He said, wait till spring. Mm-hmm. So I'm calling, okay, well, almost it's spring. When should I transplant it?
I'd be looking for probably around early April. Let the ground thaw out nicely and firm up, and then go out there and dig it up with a nice ball of dirt around the root system and replant it immediately and water it in.
All right. Sounds good. That's what I wanted to know.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Barry. The number to call with your question, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's a question from Jeremy. He says, is there a particular way that morels should be picked? Use a knife, leave a stub, smooth to the ground? What do you think, Mark?
I've talked this over with veteran morel hunters, and they all have their opinions and they all have their ways. Some will only harvest with a knife. Some will pinch. I think one thing I would suggest is that people avoid, you know, massively disturbing the area where the mushrooms are growing, because, again, you've got this net of fungus growing underground. You don't want to disturb it too much, because you're hoping to get morels later in the season or next year out of that same plot. It doesn't mean that you can't, you know, you'd have to tiptoe through it, but really tearing it up is probably not a good idea. If
so you don't want to take a spade or anything like that to it.
I don't think so. These things don't have roots. You know, you only want to take the stem and the cap, and that's all the part that you can see above ground. So, a little gentle, and that's a good recommendation.
And do you think a knife's a good idea to reduce that kind of disruption?
Yes, if you're not nervous about walking around with a knife, or you have a sheath or something like that. Yeah, you don't want to hurt yourself with your own tools.
All right. Good advice. Here's another mushroom question. This one's from Eric in Iowa Falls. Are there any other edible spring mushrooms if I'm not lucky enough for morels, as is often the case?
Yes, there are a number of others out there. There's a number of very choice mushrooms, the oyster mushroom, the chanterelle. Some people like them better than morels, but in both those cases. And there are others, hen of the woods, and a number of others that a number of people find, very good eating. There's an interesting twist in the Iowa law, though, that those other mushrooms, except for the morel group, are, as I've been told by the Iowa Department of Inspection and Appeals, those other mushrooms are illegal to sell in Iowa. There's no mechanism for training at this point for certifying people to sell those other wild gathered mushrooms. Now, if you're growing mushrooms yourself in a kind of a cultivated situation in your yard or your property, then you may be subject to Iowa Department of Health regulations. Then you're in a different area. But wild gathered mushrooms, the ones that are legal to sell, are morels, and only after you've got certified.
All right. So with the other ones, if you can be confident that you know what you're doing and go through a process to make sure that you're gathering mushrooms that are safe, they're fine to gather and eat and share, but you cannot sell them.
That's the difference, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Greg is on the line next from Ankeny. Hi, Greg.
Hi. I'm in Ankeny, but I'm a truck driver, and I live in central Illinois. I figured we had about similar growth zone. But I was wondering about pruning back grapes for the season.
Right. You want to do that before they leaf out. And so you have plenty of time, I would think, probably 3-4 weeks to do that. No problem there as far as timing.
Okay. If we do it this weekend, is that too early? Or
nope, that's fine.
All right.
Typically here in Iowa, we'll start probably sometime in late February. It needs to be done usually by early April.
Okay. And how drastic should we go on our prune back?
Well, the key there is that they bear fruit on last year's growth, okay? And if you have them pruned on like a trellis, that vine may have maybe 200, 250 buds capable of producing fruit. And basically what you want to do is reduce that quite a bit. And when you're done, there should be no more than 60 buds capable of producing fruit when you're done pruning. So you're going to prune out the majority of the vine.
Oh, okay. About 60 buds in. Okay.
At most,
and
right.
I have one more question about – at the most. Okay. I have one more question about strawberries. Is that okay?
Sure.
last winter, before it got cold, I built a little fence around strawberries and put about 4 inches or so of straw on them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm new to growing strawberries. I went out and looked a little, pulled the straw back the other day, and it looked like the plants are gone. Is that
They shouldn't be.
Normal?
Yeah, that's not normal. They should still be there. They should still be green. So I have some doubts about their survival. They may have gone and died, but they should still be there. They should still be green. Normally, we uncover those in central Iowa around mid-April.
About mid-April. Okay.
Right. We may have some warmer weather before that, but we want to discourage early growth and early blooming. And so if we uncovered those now, and then we had some warm weather, they might bloom, let's say, in early to mid-April. And then if we have a frost or freeze, those flowers are destroyed, and we've lost most of our crops. So we want to discourage their growth by keeping on that mulch. So typically what we suggest is going out after we had some warm weather and checking the plants, because the plants will start to grow as the weather gets warmer, and you'll see the new foliage. The new foliage will be kind of a whiter yellow color versus the old foliage, which is green. And when quite a few plants are beginning to produce new foliage, then you have to take off the mulch.
All right. And so hopefully when he goes out a little later on and pulls up that straw, he'll find hopefully some plants.
Yes.
Because it hasn't been that severe a winter. That
no,
would be
we
surprising.
Haven't.
Right?
We've had a very mild winter, actually, as far as temperature-wise. So I would assume they probably should be in pretty good shape. And we actually could get a peach crop in southern Iowa this year because
Richard, be careful.
I know. We've had a mild winter. So they have to get by one more obstacle. They can't bloom too early. If they bloom too early, if we have a frost or freeze, we'll lose them too. So
yeah, I remember it was just a few years ago. We had such a mild winter.
Yes.
It was so beautiful. We had blossoms on all the trees and then no cherries, no apples.
That's right.
All right. Okay. We'll just all keep our fingers crossed for the next 2 months. Greg, good luck with your grapes and your strawberries and drive safe out there. Judy's on the line next in Pella. Hi, Judy.
Yes, I have a question about pruning a burning bush and whether now is the time to do that.
Yes, you can. There's no rush. You probably have maybe 2 or 3 weeks at least to do it. And what I would do is try to prune out select branches and not just give it a haircut.
Okay. If it's very overgrown, I want to decrease it by a couple of feet. Is that possible?
It is. I would say I would reduce the overall size by no more than one third.
Okay. That's
and
good.
If you need to do more, you can do some more next spring.
That's great. Thank you.
All right, Judy, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Robin is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Robin.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Hey. I remember, I think it was last fall, there was some discussion on poison ivy and how you have to expose the stem to put the eradicator stuff on it to kill it. This spring, I've been out there pulling what I believe is poison ivy and Virginia creeper out of our wood. We have a wooded area. We live in a wooded neighborhood, and there's poison ivy everywhere. And my question is there any way at all to get rid of this stuff? I've been pulling it up and then putting little drops of the poison on the spots that I can see the exposed stem. But other than that, I don't know if I'm making the problem worse by doing this, or...
Well, I think it's going to take persistence and patience as far as controlling those. Both of those are native plants. I'd be most concerned about the poison ivy. And as far as doing that, Roundup is a way of doing it where you either spray the plant directly when it's in leaf, and you typically want it to be in leaf, Or what you do is if you have a larger vine, what you can do is cut it off and then apply the Roundup directly to the cut surface.
All right, and wear gloves and
yes,
be careful.
Be careful.
All right, Robin, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer more of your questions. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Mark Gleason, a professor in the Department of Plant Pathology and Microbiology at Iowa State University. They are here to answer your questions. We've been talking a lot about morel mushrooms this hour. Mushroom questions are welcome, along with any questions about the plants in your life. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. And with me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Mark Gleason, a professor in the Department of Plant Pathology and Microbiology at ISU, and they are here to answer your questions. We've been talking a lot about morel mushrooms this hour. Your mushroom questions are welcome, but also your questions about any of the plants in your life. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Kim is up next in Des Moines. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My question, I'm looking out at our raspberry bush. We've got red raspberries. We've had them since we moved in here about 5 years ago. I guess this would be our sixth season. We finally decided we're done with them, all right? The jam is great, all that stuff. We want to get rid of them. So last week, the weather was nice. We went through and cut them back to about a foot tall, and now I'm wondering how do we get rid of them so they don't come back, because I don't want to have digging up, you know, rogue raspberry bushes to be an annual event.
Well, digging them up obviously would be an option. I'd probably wait and do that. I'd probably do that in April. But okay. Simply physically digging them up and removing them, you can. It's not impossible at all. Now, if you do that, you'll probably miss a few where maybe some roots are still in the ground and they'll sprout again in a few weeks and do it again. But if you follow through this summer, by the end of summer, they're going to be gone. They should be gone. So that would be my option.
So it's not going to be a nightmare like Creeping Charlie that will never go away?
No, it shouldn't be. No, not if you're persistent. They should be gone by the end of summer.
Oh, thank goodness. Okay, thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
All right, Kim, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. We should follow that up with a question about trying to grow red raspberries, but I don't have one of those on the list right now. We'll get one later. Let's go to Tom in Davenport next. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I had two weeping cherry trees. Last year, one of them had, because of a late frost in the spring, it froze, and I lost half of the top of the tree, so I actually removed it and got another one. At that time, I was told that I ought to prune the other one that I've got. This tree is probably about 3.5 to 4 years old, and they recommended pruning the top of it to where it was about 18 inches. Is that a proper way to do it?
Well, it's hard for me to describe what I would do on the radio, but those trees are kind of finicky. They're not the most cold hardy, and oftentimes we do see some dieback in them. I would be inclined, as far as pruning them, just to prune out any dead wood and leave it at that.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Good luck with that,
That'll
Tom.
Do it.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Let's get through a few email questions here. This one's from JM in Iowa City. How soon could a person grow grass from seed?
I'd wait probably and do that around mid-April before sowing the grass seed. For the grass seed to germinate, you have to have nice warm soil temperatures. And sure, we might have some nice warm days in March, but we could also have some more snow in March. So usually by mid-April, things are more consistent where we have some nice warm temperature. And so I'd be shooting for around mid-April.
But we're almost through the girls' state basketball tournament. That means snow is over, right?
No. This is Iowa.
All right. This one is from Joan in Ames. My daughter in Minneapolis solved her fall leaf problem by raking them all onto her perennial bed. I'm thinking she can't leave them there. Am I right?
If there's a large quantity, probably not, because you're covering the crowns with a lot of wet debris. And that could, if we have a wet spring, could cause maybe those leaves to smother the plants a little bit. So if it's a pretty deep level of leaves, I would get it off for the most part.
All right. Sounds like you're settling a family argument there as well. Hope we're not starting anything else. All right. This one's from Tyler in Cedar Rapids. When is the best time to prune apple and pear trees?
Fruit trees in general, late winter is the best time. So March typically is ideal. So it doesn't have to be done today or tomorrow, but it should be done by early April.
All right. And this one's from Derek in Cedar Rapids. When is the best time to spray for Creeping Charlie, and what's the best product to use?
The best time actually is in the fall. And you need to apply a broadleaf herbicide, and you need to do it twice, about 30 days apart. The first one could be basically late September, early October. The second one a month later. The broadleaf herbicide should contain either 2,4-D or triclopyr, and that's T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R. Either one of those two active ingredients. Not hard to find those products that contain those materials, but you need to do it twice. And actually, the funny thing is, what happens is when you apply that broadleaf herbicide in the fall, the herbicide does not directly kill the ground ivy or Creeping Charlie. It does weaken it quite a bit, so it actually winter kills, and that's what happens.
Oh, interesting. All right. Steve is on the line next in West Des Moines. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I've been treating some bush honeysuckle in my timber here about an hour south of Des Moines for the last few years, and I'm wondering if it's too late for me to continue with the cut stump treatments now that we're getting into warmer weather. I'm better off to just wait now. And I generally use Toradon when it's down around freezing, and then when it's above that, I'll just treat with about a 40% glyphosate.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that. You may want to contact your district forester and see if they have recommendations on that. And you can find them on their webpage and contact your district forester and ask him about that. I'm not sure.
Very good.
All right, Steve.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. Good enough. Bye.
Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Bob in Bettendorf. Hi, Bob.
Yeah. We've spotted the brown marmorated stink bug in the past here in Bettendorf, but this year they're literally coming out of the woodwork at my house. Instead of the box elder bugs, we've got these stink bugs. I'm worried about my apple trees. Will imidacloprid help, or do I just surface spray them, or what do I do?
Well, as far as insect control is concerned, the first thing is that you have to use a product label for use on fruit trees, and many fruit trees have limitations. I mean, as far as fruit tree sprays have limitations as far as the number of applications. And so I'm not sure that the insecticide route is going to be that effective. Hopefully, they'll go for other things, and they won't bother the apples. It's hard to control those insects on fruit trees. Very hard.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, good luck, Bob.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call. I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that as the season goes on. Peg is up next in Des Moines. Hi, Peg.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, my question has to do with milkweed, which you would think would grow anywhere. And I planted about 4 of them in a corner in my yard, and they grew for a while, and then all of a sudden they all died. And I'm trying to decide. I didn't see anybody doing anything with any kind of spray, any kind of... They did do a sidewalk on the other side of the fence, but I never saw anyone spray. And when they died, it almost looked like somebody had put something on them that killed them. So I don't know. Should we do something differently with the soil? I think the soil is quite clay. Or should we just plant some more and hope?
Well, there are a number of actual milkweeds that we can grow here in Iowa. You have the...
I have swamp milkweed.
Okay. Well, the swamp milkweed likes a moist, well-drained soil. It does not like dry situations at all. So you need typically a moist, well-drained soil for the swamp milkweed. Now, the other milkweeds, like the butterfly weed, for example, which has the pretty orange flowers, That can be grown in fairly dry situations, and they should survive even in clay soils. So if you have enough sun, you might want to try the butterfly weed.
All right. So good luck with that this year, Peg. And sometimes you just got to keep trying with that,
sure.
Right?
Right.
All right. We'll get back to the phones. James is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, James.
Hi. I had a question. You were talking about the morels, and then you kind of vaguely talked about, you know, that there are others out there and the legality of selling them. I was just curious if you could discuss briefly the other types and varieties that are out there that may be sought after, and then also ones that should be avoided.
Okay, well, that's a really broad topic, isn't it, Mark? Because there are a lot out there that should be avoided.
Yes, there are. And the funny thing is, if you go to the internet, you will see testimonials by individuals who have eaten some of these mushrooms, saying that they really enjoy them, they're really choice. But some of these mushrooms have some real risks associated with them. A number of genera, like Gyromitra, for instance, or Verpa, there are some of these mushrooms actually have biochemicals that are very similar to rocket fuel in them. They metabolize to rocket fuel when you eat them, and that's your body is really not very adapted to rocket fuel. And so there's a number of very nasty things that can happen with eating some of these mushrooms that, from everything from symptoms very much like food poisoning. Anybody's ever had that knows that's not pleasant, but then on to other things like liver failure, convulsions, death. There are mushrooms that are quite toxic out there, but the individual tolerance to those mushrooms vary. And some people can eat them and tolerate them and others can't. So if
he's looking for a good resource, I mean, this is a bigger topic than we can really fully cover right now on the radio. But mm-hmm. if he's looking for a good resource, where would you send him?
I'd probably go to the Prairie States Mushroom Hunters Club. They have an online presence, a website. A lot of their members are quite knowledgeable, and the information you tend to get there is quite good. Number of other sites, Tom Volk's site, VOLK, is also a very good site there. But there's the internet is a big landfill, and there's a lot of trash in the landfill too. So, you can be misled, but I think there are some sites that are highly reliable.
All right, so be careful, but there are good resources out there. Let's go back to the phones. Rudy is on the line in Westgate. Hi, Rudy.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a snowball bush and a forsythia plant or bush that are about 10 feet apart, and about both of them are about 10 feet tall. They're being overshadowed by a maple that's grown up very nicely. And I'd like to be able to cut these back down. You tell me if I'm wet here. I'd like to cut them down so they're more manageable, like maybe 4 feet tall. I'm just wondering how to control these things because they just grow like crazy.
Okay, with the forsythia, I would probably wait and do that after it's done blooming. It should bloom hopefully sometime around mid-April. Let it go ahead and bloom. And then as soon as it's done blooming, I would prune it back. And you can prune it back pretty severely. It's very tolerant of that. What you might also want to do maybe is go out there and maybe in the next week or two, clip off two or three small branches, maybe a foot, 2 feet in length, and put those in a plastic bag with some moist peat moss, put them in the refrigerator, and then in April, take them out and put them in the ground. Just stick them in the ground, and they will root and grow, and you can come up with a new plant.
So you can
actually remove that other plant if you want to eventually. It's pretty easy to propagate from cutting. So you can do that. The other one is a snowball bush, did you say?
Yes.
Okay. How big does it normally get?
Well, it's at least 10 feet tall.
Okay. I would probably prune that back sometime in this month. And I would be inclined to go out there and prune out the bigger stems, maybe select maybe 3, 4, 5 of the largest, oldest stems and cut those back near the ground and leave some of the smaller canes there. And then that should reduce the overall size some. And then do that again next year where you take out some additional older stems. And over time, you reduce the size of that shrub.
So I can cut it down. I can cut out some of the larger stems. Can I cut some of the thinner ones? Can I cut them down to like maybe 8 feet? And then next year, cut it down a little further?
Well, you can cut those that you keep. You can cut them back by some, but maybe next spring you take them off completely at the ground, possibly, is what I'm thinking. Because when you prune out some of those old shoots this year, new shoots should come up from the ground, and they'll be much smaller in size. And then you take out some more old ones next year, and you're getting rid of all the older, bigger growth, and you're reducing the size of the plant that way.
All right, Rudy, thanks a lot for your call. Tally's on the line, our last call of the day in Fort Dodge. Hi, Tally.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Oh, sorry. I have morel mushrooms growing on my farm. It's always just two or three at a time every year. I was wondering if there's anything I could do to get them to propagate, if I should always pick them or just let them go, put something down for them.
That's a good question, and one of the the holy grail of morel mushrooms is to find a situation where we can actually, you know, cultivate them and get them to grow in some kind of managed situation. And there's a number of people trying that, but so far as I know, not with consistent results. It's good to know that, you know, these mushrooms do require, you know, decaying organic matter, so minimal disturbance and providing enough decaying organic matter is could be helpful, but nobody's really solved this question of how can we really make these things sit up in bed like we'd like them to.
Maybe someday. And here's a reminder from someone in Story County. Since we've been talking about mushroom hunting, he said, please remind listeners that permission's required to hunt mushrooms on private land. So that's a that's something to remember if you are out looking for morel mushrooms. And again, you have your certification workshops coming up this month and next month as well, Mark?
Yes.
All right. And we've put up information about that on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio, and also on our Twitter feed. And you can find out more at Iowa State University Extension as well. Mark Gleason is a professor in the Department of Plant Pathology and Microbiology at Iowa State University. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Jordy.
ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we will be back next Friday with Horticulture Day. Now we are back on our weekly schedule for Horticulture Day, now through the end of the growing season. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a wonderful weekend. This is Iowa Public Radio.